All right, everybody, welcome back to the Dylan Gemelli podcast and the highly anticipated part two with my good friend, attorney Rick Collins. Welcome back, Rick. Great to have you, brother.
Thanks for having me back, Dylan. Awesome.
Well, obviously, time is always of the essence and we were limited and we got a lot of stuff that we want to get to. So let's just jump right back into it, man.
Sounds good, brother. Let's do it.
We got a lot of stuff to talk to you about, guys. Rick's got another really good attorney client story here, and I want to get into that, but then we're going to dig deep today. We're going to go off together a little bit on some interesting topics, but you'll hear as we go.
Let's have some fun.
Let's hear it, Rick. So, tell me about this story, man.
Well, thanks, man. So the last time we talked, I think I told a little tale of a traffic stop somewhere down in Mississippi of a New York driver who wound up ultimately having his car searched pursuant to a canine search, which purported to be for anabolic steroids, despite the fact that no dog has ever been trained to detect anabolic steroids, as far as I'm concerned. And if anybody wants to hear that story, they can go back and listen to our last little journey together.
That's right.
But the other story that I didn't tell, which you and I have talked about a little bit since, was, in the context of the criminal justice system, we often think of most people being guilty in that system, right? And that's, look, is there overcharging? Sure. Are there mitigating factors? Yes. Should some things maybe not be crimes at all? Yeah, okay. Yeah. We can go there, right? But by and large, if the majority of people being arrested and prosecuted in a society were innocent people, that system wouldn't work, right?
Right.
That society would come crashing down. So it's somewhat rare to get an absolutely innocent client in a criminal matter. I have had a few. I've had some cases of misidentification. And eyewitness identification is not nearly as reliable as most people think.
Right.
But I had a case a few years ago in a Western state that still sticks with me to this day, because it was a situation where a young woman who was a competitive female bodybuilder, not a pro, but a high-ranking national amateur, called me up one day, very upset, and said, "Rick, you got to help me." And so I'm like, "Sure, I help people all across the country. What's going on?" And she was like, "I have been charged with selling steroids that I never sold. I've never sold a steroid in my life." And so I'm like, "Okay, well, what's going on?" She goes, "Well, there was a guy who came to my gym," and she ran like a little small executive training gym, not a big commercial, certainly far from a hardcore muscle gym.
Right.
And she's like, "Guy came, called me up on the phone. He said he was interested in working out, joining the gym, maybe me putting him on a diet program." I said, "Sure." He asked me about steroids. I said, "No, I don't get involved in that." He asked me about supplements, and I told him, "Okay, I would recommend a multivitamin, and I'll give you a recommendation. I sell a multivitamin here. It's these big green pills. I will sell you a bottle for $20 when you come in tomorrow, and I'll write you up we'll get you started on a training program." He goes, "Great." So I'm like, "Okay, so what happened?" She goes, "Well, he came in the next day. I sat with him in my office. He asked me about training. He asked me about diet. He asked me about steroids. And again, I told him, "Look, I it's part of high level bodybuilding, but I don't get involved with that." And then he said, "Well, what about those supplements that we talked about?" And so I took him out. I sold him $20 worth of multivitamins. And he went his way. And a couple of weeks later, the police came to my house and with a search warrant and ransacked my house. They found some steroids in my husband's side of the bedroom nightstand. And so they've charged me with selling one vial of testosterone from my gym. I never sold it. It was a bottle of multivitamins. Okay. So I said, well, let me see what I can do. So I call up the prosecutor. And the prosecutor was a young boy, you know, young guy, probably in his 20s, starting his career. And I'm like, what's going on? This you're charging this woman with selling a steroid, and she's denying having ever sold anything. And he was like, well, you know, she's not being honest with you. She's lying to you. She had a drug-related phone call with a confidential informant, because the guy on the phone was working for us as the government and working off his own steroid case. And so he called her up and he talked to her about steroids. And she told him that if he came in the next day, she'd sell him a vial of testosterone hidden in a bottle of multivitamins for $100. That phone call was not recorded. But the next day, when he showed up for the gym, he first met with a police agent who patted him down, gave him money, $100, to buy the steroids, put a little wire on him, and sent him in with a recording device. And so that was recorded. And so the prosecutor says to me, look, you know, she came, you know, she met with him. He comes out a little while later. He brings to the police agent a multivitamin bottle. The agent opens up, takes off the lid, looks inside, and guess what's in there? Vial of testosterone. So we've got our dead to rights. So the drug call the day before, combined with the transaction from the gym, and the steroids in the house, we're a three strikes and you're outlaw. With those three transactions and calls, well, she's looking at 10 years in prison.
What?
10 years in prison. He goes, now look, I know she's got no prior record. She seems like a good person. But I'll tell you what, if she pleads guilty to a felony, I'll give her probation. She'll get straight probation. Not a day in prison, but she's taking a felony. So I go back to her and I'm like, this, tell her the situation. She goes, it's a lie. I never saw such I never had a vial of testosterone. The steroids in the house were my husband's. There was no talk about drugs in that initial phone call. I am fighting this case. I didn't do it. I'll take 10 years in prison, but I'm not going to plead guilty to something I didn't do. And I respected her for that. So there were two things that helped in this case. So one was, in some states, you are allowed to depose the prosecution witnesses in advance of a trial.
Okay.
Not every state. This happened to be one of the states that allowed it. So I was able to set up a meeting where I could actually interrogate and question the confidential informant and the agent, the cop who was on the case. The other thing is that every state allows for discovery, right? So you are entitled to understand what the evidence is against your client. So things like that recording gets provided to the defense counsel. So I listened to that tape of that transaction because I wanted to make sure that what I was hearing was right. And I had my partners listen to it. I passed it around because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't hearing something that wasn't accurate.
Right.
And so we set up a date, got on a plane. I flew out there to this western state. The little town was up in the mountains, drove all the way up into the mountains, show up, meet with her the night before. I got local counsel because I wasn't admitted in that state. Local counsel, good lawyer, older guy, very knowledgeable about the way things worked in that little courthouse. Spent the meeting the night before trying to talk her into taking a plea.
Right.
And saying, you're going to go to prison for 10 years. This is, and, but I believed in her. I really did. And I thought I had a good case. And so we went in the next day. I show up and I walk in and the prosecutor's there. He says, oh, I got bad news. I go, what's the matter? He goes, well, the confidential informant had an emergency with his family. He's not available. So he's not here today. We can reschedule this for another day. I'm like, I, you know, this is not a woman of great means. She's an ordinary person. I'm not going to fly out here again. I'm here now. That's it. So he goes, well, you know, we can do it in a couple of weeks. I'm like, look, if I'm going to do that, I'll come back in like 2 months. I got a busy schedule. I got cases all over the country. I'm not going to be able to do that. He goes, well, the problem is we have a time limit on the probation deal. So if she doesn't take the probation deal in 30 days, that's lost. So you can do you could question the witnesses, but you're not going to get the deal back. And you're going to be ultimately going to trial. And if she loses, she's going to prison for 10 years. So I'm like, okay, what are my options here? He goes, well, I could probably get the guy on the telephone. I said, okay, you got the agent here? Yeah, get him on the phone. First time I've ever cross-examined a witness over the phone, oh, you know, yeah. But, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, right? So right. It was the best option because I didn't want to lose the possibility of the probation if things went south.
Sure.
So even though I felt pretty confident, and I felt confident I could do what I needed to do over the phone. So I questioned the cop was there, and I found out that he let the guy drive his own car the 3 or 4 blocks from where they met to where the gym was, which is kind of like not best practice, right?
Right.
Because you always want you want to avoid the possibility of a sneaky snitch. Somebody's going to pull a fast one, right?
Right.
So he didn't do that. I got him to admit he didn't strip search him. He didn't go in his socks. He didn't look in all the other places that theoretically you could have hidden a vial of testosterone.
Right.
Right. So, and I got that the guy was working off his own steroid trafficking case where he had been given a deal where if he could set up 3 people, he would get a misdemeanor. Now, he had set up one like 8 months earlier. So I figured he's probably getting a lot of pressure from the prosecutor to say, look, if you can't find 2 more people to set up, you know, you're not getting your deal. You're not getting your plea deal. So he was desperate to try to find somebody. And if you looked at her, tremendous person, but she looked like a bodybuilder. She looked like it was low-hanging fruit. So if you're sitting there in a courtroom and a jury were to see a bodybuilder on a steroid case, you kind of have a few strikes against you to begin with, right? The assumptions, you know, they could see and probably would believe that she was at a minimum a heavy steroid or a steroid user, right?
Right.
So you don't get to elite bodybuilder status, you know, realistically.
No.
So I get him on the phone and I start asking him a bunch of questions. And ultimately, he admits that he wasn't strip searched. He admits he was working off the case. And he claims that they went in, that he was in the office with her, that she said the things she said about steroids, but that when he said, oh, what about the supplements, he was referring to the steroids, and that when he got to the counter, she sold him the bottle of vitamins with the vial of testosterone inside, and that he paid her $100, not the $20 of the vitamin bottle. Okay. So I said, well, what did you do afterward? Did you take that? You now had what you claim are the drugs in this bottle. And you claim that this had the what you were sent in to get. So you took it right outside to the cop, right? Oh, yeah. Because you wouldn't have gone somewhere else first, right?
Right.
Well, no. Because you understand basic chain of evidence. You need to take that evidence and bring it right to the cop. That's what he told you, right? And that's what you did? Oh, well, I had to go to the bathroom. I'm like, really? You had to go to the bathroom? You had to go to the bathroom so badly that you couldn't wait just a few minutes to take this precious evidence that you claim you had to the police officer? He goes, no, I had to go so bad. I had to go so bad. I'm like, number one or number two? He goes, number one. I go, all right. So your bladder was so full that you needed to stop at this bathroom and you went into that bathroom before bringing the evidence to the cop. Yes, yes. And you went in that it was a one-person bathroom? Yes. And you closed the door and you locked the door? Yes. nobody in there but you, right? Yes. What he didn't realize was that the tape that he was wearing was running the whole time, right up until he saw the cop. So I had, when I listened to that tape, what I realized was, yeah, I heard the door close. I heard the lock go on. I heard his keys placed on the sink. I heard cellophane crinkling as he took off the cellophane that closed the lid of the vitamin bottle.
Mm-hmm.
I heard tablets, big tablets, hitting the porcelain of the bowl one after another as he scooped out enough to be able to fit that vial that he had hidden somewhere on his person into that bottle.
Wow.
What I didn't hear the whole time was a single drop of number one
right
hitting that toilet.
Fucker.
And when I confronted him with this, he was like, well, I don't like the way this is going.
I wouldn't
think you would, because there's a name for it. You know what that is? It's called perjury. That's just what you've done. Well, I want to talk to my lawyer. And he hangs up the phone. Now, at this point, the prosecutor is as white as a sheet. And he looks at me and he goes, would you take a misdemeanor? I said, no. I'm going to tell you how this is going to go. You're going to dismiss all charges against this woman who was falsely accused under your watch. And I'm going to talk her out of suing you, the police department, and the DA's office for what you've done. And he's like, I can live with that. And that was the end of the case. And she then relocated, but it was a scary thing. And I've written a few legal articles about it, about what not to do if you are a police officer and you have a confidential informant and you're arranging a transaction. You don't let him drive his own car. Right. You do a full search of him because he can't be trusted.
Right.
What he didn't know also, and I had as my ace in the hole, was I had asked him, when you did this transaction, it was for $100, right? Yes, that was the price of the steroid, right? Yes.
Right.
She didn't ring it up in the cash register, right? Well, no. I mean, you don't record drug transactions,
well,
right?
No.
He goes, no, of course not. What he didn't realize was I had the time-coded receipt from the cash register. $20. $20.
Wow.
So, it was a great lesson in, you know, how the system can fail us, and it can from time to time. But it's also something that stays with me because I love what I do. I have the opportunity to help people who otherwise might have gotten bad legal advice, might have been coerced into a plea, might have not understood what to do or had the wherewithal to be able to stand up to the pressure of the government. You know, the government has to prove somebody guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. They've got the burden of proof. But in the real world, the government has huge advantages. And
right.
And the defense lawyer is kind of up against the awesome power of the government. The defendant is the little guy or woman. And so I love the opportunity to be on their side. You know, I was a prosecutor, as you know, for 5 years, and I never prosecuted a steroid case. I prosecuted, you know, people who hurt other people physically, economically, sexually,
right.
Those kind of things. And I felt good about that. But I couldn't be happier with what I do, Dylan. I love it. I'm very blessed to do what I do.
Absolutely. I love it. The audacity, though, to say, would you take a misdemeanor after hearing me? That's the worst part of the story to me. What an ass, man. Because he just didn't want to look bad, obviously. And
sure, he's trying to hedge his bets, right?
Oh, my gosh. I'm glad you put him in his place. That made my day to hear that. What a little
It was a good day. It was a good day for justice, my friend.
Yes.
Very good day in the hallowed halls of justice.
I love it. And I love you're on the right side of it. That's awesome. So, okay, that was a great story, man. I was really into it. Let's shift gears. Let's talk about some of the stuff that we've kind of been talking about together. Yeah. And
you and I have been chatting about some stuff, and we're definitely on the same page. And I think hopefully some of your listeners are on that same page, but hopefully maybe some aren't too.
Yeah.
And that's cool, because having discussions and hearing things that are not completely within your own bubble of, you know, confirmation bias, so to speak, is a good thing. Because sometimes we come away from conversations where we hear people say things that we don't necessarily agree with initially. And after thinking about them a bit, we're like, you know, maybe I was wrong about that.
Absolutely.
Maybe that does make sense.
What I find that makes us adults and reasonable people, as opposed to people that get so angry when you ask a question, or because they, and I've been like this before with some of my beliefs on, like, you know, steroid concepts, for example, dosing and ways of doing things. And it's like you get dialed into one thing and you don't realize that you could be wrong, and you don't let somebody reasonably explain. And I think that's what I want to do with you here, is break down some facts, no anger, no ways of conveying the information in a kind of a false manner like people tend to do with bias. I want to just talk about the realities of the situation. And like you said, it's good if there's people that don't maybe agree or don't know, so they can kind of hear a good informational bit on what the realities are, as opposed to the facades that get passed around, or the stereotypes and things like that, that we kind of are so enthralled in now with the way that the media is and the way things get passed around. And I think you know where I'm going with this. So
sure.
I know that you wrote a book, the Alpha Male Challenge book, and that's kind of where I want to go with this, because one of the things that I believe you and many others, probably especially in our bodybuilding world, have kind of struggled with is this, like, I would call it, and I think this is what it is, it's an attack on masculinity. And it's, I've seen it go from like participation trophy things, you know, like little things that add up to where it is today, where it's like there's an attack on being a man. And it's almost like I feel as though there's pressures on us to make us look weak, or make people feel weak or inferior. I think there's a motive there, but you could call that conspiracy or not. But I would like to talk about the attack on masculinity and also the attack on testosterone in general.
Right. Right. And it's related, right?
Yes.
You know, masculinity is sort of the, you know, the testosterone is I suppose, like the biochemical marker for masculinity, technically, right?
Right.
So the two kind of get lumped together. You've got many years ago, it was Alan Alda, the actor from MASH,
right,
who I think first used the term testosterone poisoning to refer to the idea that the bad things that people do, particularly that men do, are because of this chemical that makes them, you know, this biochemical in our systems that makes us, you know, act poorly and be violent and be aggressive and take advantage of people and do all these terrible things that, you know, he envisioned, right?
Right.
And so testosterone poisoning and toxic masculinity are just two different ways of, I think, referring to the same behavior, one referring to the chemical, one referring to, you know, the phenotype, or the, you know, the way we appear.
Right.
And so, you know, I think there was certainly, even at the time that I wrote with a co-author, that book, Alpha Male Challenge, which was published by Rodale in 2009, even then we were seeing this sort of change in society where traditional masculinity was being devalued, right? And that, you know, those were now seen not as traits that were good traits, but rather they were problems. And that actually escalated through the years, because in 2019, you know, 10 years later, the American Psychological Association came out with a position statement that said that traditional masculinity is toxic, is harmful to boys and men. So the things that we think of as traditional masculinity, strength, you know, stoicism, bravery, the how-to, can-do attitude, you know, all of the things are viewed as toxic. That's a huge issue. And even the whole term toxic masculinity, to me, you know, you could never flip that around gender wise without being ridden out on the rails or canceled. But it's okay, because the society has become more that way. And so we've got this societal and cultural shift toward a less binary, particularly less masculine kind of, value. And we've got, as you know, there's been on a physiological level, there's been a decline in testosterone levels.
Yes.
On average, generation by generation. In other words, the generation that's around now has, on average, lower testosterone levels than our fathers did.
Yep.
And our fathers had, on average, lesser testosterone levels than our grandfathers did. Before that, there probably was no testing, but is it possible that our great-grandfathers had higher levels and their fathers had higher levels, and that there's this ongoing diminishing level of testosterone on average? And obviously some people will be higher and some guys lower, but right. On average, it's this generational decline. And we can talk about why that is, whether it's our diet, whether it's increased obesity, which is definitely linked to low testosterone levels, mm-hmm. whether it's phytoestrogens and you know, endocrine disruptors in our diet or in the plastics, but it's a reality. And so we're becoming a less and less masculine society, both at the biochemical level and at the cultural level.
Yeah. I think a lot of that has to do with diet, like you said, and the types of foods and the things that they do to the foods. I think a lot of it is alcohol related and smoking related and things like that. It seems like it gets more prevalent. And this, I feel like there's such a double standard when it comes to everything anymore. And I did a video on accountability a while ago, and it seems like there's a built-in excuse for everything. And it's fair to attack one, but it's not fair to attack the other. And there's these built-in excuses for basically just a lack of being good at what you do.
Right.
And people are not open to any sort of constructive criticism. If anything is deemed wrong, that it's obviously this or this. It can't just be that I'm inadequate at what I'm doing. And right. That kind of correlates over into the masculine thing. And it's, I don't know who came up with it or why, but the way that what happens is that it gets passed down. The media grabs a hold of it. It gets thrown out everywhere. It gets put out on social media. It gets put out on news sites, whatever the case may be. Political figures do it. And then before you know it, it's in everybody's head. It's almost right. Like when you were watch a cartoon and they'd get hypnotized, you know, and like a Bugs Bunny or something. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, they're walking around like, whatever the right. case. And it's just, it right. seems like it's getting worse and it's getting worse. And then with the attack on testosterone level, I mean, what makes a man and a woman, right? The hormones of testosterone and estrogen, correct? So,
although even those definitions now are blurring, and it's become, in many social circles, it's hard to even use that language anymore.
Well, I agree.
Candidates for the Supreme Court who need a biology degree to make a determination of what is a man or a woman. But
no thanks.
But yeah, it's a different world. And I think feminism, is certainly, it's a great thing for women to be empowered. It's fantastic. But it shouldn't be at the expense of men.
No.
or masculinity. And so there's a difference between being, you know, a patriarchal society, or the patriarchy is a way of suppressing or oppressing women. Bad, obviously a bad thing. But for a traditionally masculine man to now have to apologize for being that way is also a bad thing.
It is. And there's nothing wrong with having emotions or, you know, vulnerabilities or whatever. That's not what masculinity is. I mean, right. And I think part of the blurring issue is the connotations and definitions of what masculinity actually is.
Right.
And, you know, what makes a man and a woman and a woman. And I know what you're saying. I don't subscribe to that nonsense. I'm not going to go recreate definitions in biology and any of that. So if you subscribe to that, that's cool. I got no problem with it. I just don't live there. So when I think of it, I think of it as man and woman. And I think it's changing the way that life has been our entire lives. I have an issue with it. I do. And I am big. I've put so much study into hormones and, you know, testosterone and sure. also with females, because I work with so many. And so I subscribe to that and live by it. But I just don't like this attack on men being men. And you don't. And like you were saying, it doesn't resonate to the other side, because if you went that way, you would. I mean, you might as well just never go speak in public again. I mean, right. seriously, you might as well just disappear yeah. off the face of the earth, because yeah. you'll be the worst person that ever lived. But it's okay yeah. right. to, you know, to come one way. And I got a big issue right. with that, too. Yeah. I just think that a lot of people are fed up with some of this stuff, and they're fighting back, or they're speaking back. And when more and more and more people do it, you can't censor everybody and you can't attack everybody. You know what I mean? And I think there's a big fear yeah. amongst so many people, and you don't have to get angry about it. And you just speak your mind and give the facts. And I think there's right. more reasonable people than this nonsensical stuff. It's starting to go back a little bit. I see it.
There's a little bit of a pushback going on, and well, even our book Alpha Male Challenge was intended to be somewhat of a pushback on that, to essentially redefine what is an alpha male,
right?
You know, and in a context of how do you be a leader, a traditional masculine leader, without being an asshole, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that was essentially how we defined alpha male, as being the leader with all of the attributes of courage and vitality and strength, of both physical strength and strength of character. A lot of the book dealt with what we called alpha attitude, which was having the right attitude to be a leader, to be to have courage and confidence and all of the things that go hand in hand with traditional masculinity without being toxic.
Yeah.
You know, masculinity isn't itself toxic.
No.
But some believe it is. And I think that's where I disagree. I don't think being feminine or being masculine is toxic. Some people are toxic.
Yeah.
And they happen to be men. And they may act in ways that are, you know, very bad and mistreat others. But that isn't because they're masculine or because they're men. It's because they're assholes.
That's right.
There are also some women who are the same.
Yeah.
So I think we shouldn't use these sorts of identity, you know, buckets to put people in. We should judge people without really looking at, you know, those sorts of things, and judge them on how they act and who they are and what they are inside and how they treat others. And,
yep.
and I think that's where maybe where we're coming back to, hopefully, is some recognition of that. You know, testosterone in the average person's mind, unlike estrogen, testosterone, so the female counterpart biochemical, doesn't have the same stigma attached to it. Let's face it.
Right.
Testosterone has this poisoning context from Alan Alda on through now, because I think some people associate it with unbridled aggression and violence. It's much more nuanced and contextual than that, because sure, in the animal world, aggression and testosterone are correlated, you know. Testosterone rises to meet challenges. So which came first, the chicken or the egg, is an issue. But you know, testosterone clearly is related to trying to improve status or yes. maintain status or dominance in a hierarchy. Yeah. So in a pecking order, the, you know, testosterone will help to keep you where you are so that you don't slip down. And it's interesting. There was a study done on male monkeys where they found that if you take five male monkeys and you put them together into a habitat, they will almost immediately establish a pecking order.
Right.
Who's the top, who's second, third, fourth, fifth. It's when you, this is natural. You know, as much as we may try to get away from the idea of the hierarchy in society, this is the way it works, right? And what they found is if they take that middle monkey, the third monkey, and they take him out of the cage and they inject him with a shitload of testosterone, and then they put him back in, what does he do? Well, if your theory is that testosterone just causes unbridled, mindless aggression, he'd be attacking all the other monkeys.
Exactly.
But that's not what he does. What he does is he makes life a living hell for the fourth and fifth monkeys, the monkeys who are below him, to maintain his dominance and his status. But he doesn't go beyond the pre-existing hierarchy that's already set up. He doesn't go after, he is perfectly nice to one and two, but makes four and five miserable. Because it's all about, yes, it's dominance. It's about keeping status, because in the animal world, status, where you fall in that hierarchy, is related to how much food you get and the quality of the mates and how much your feeding or territory is and all of the resources that enable you to best pass on your genes, because that's, let's face it, Dylan, that's what it's all about, right?
Right.
Carbon-based life forms. We are passing on our genetic material. That's rule one. And so that's what it does. But in humans, the correlation to aggression is much more tenuous, because if you're the chair of a chemistry department and you want to become the dean of the school, you're not going to go in and start biting the other members of the faculty, right? Because that's not going to get you where you want. You may use other ways of establishing status. Maybe you'll write more. Maybe you'll try to speak at engagements more, or in some way try to raise your status so you'll get more resources, you know, more food, better mates, all the things that come from for all, you know, organisms. But aggression is not necessarily what it is. And that's, you know, to extrapolate what goes on in certain animals to humans is kind of simplistic.
Yeah. And, you know, and like you were saying, too much of anything is obviously bad. You can take too much, vitamins can be toxic, right? I mean, anything.
Sure.
So too much testosterone, I'm firmly against that when people are dosing extreme amounts and their levels are too high for too long. Amongst the health implications, it can obviously cause mental implications.
Sure.
But what and you and I especially, I think we put a ton of time into TRT, testosterone itself, and years upon years. And I don't think that some people that make these comments realize that, one, in extreme cases, low testosterone could be fatal.
Sure.
And two, the quality of life that you are losing with lower levels of testosterone, it would blow a lot of people's minds. I don't think they understand what people do go through. And it's what makes your quality of life as a man, just like as a female, if your estrogen is crushed, you're going to have a lot of problems. And right. as a man, you would too. But
right.
when those are your main hormones, they can really, really make your life a living hell. I've seen it a million times, and right. I'm sure you have too.
Sure.
And so it biologically doesn't make sense. Factually doesn't make sense. And
right.
humanity, it doesn't make sense.
Well,
in reality,
if you even look at, you know, hypogonadism or low testosterone is linked with all sorts of problems, metabolic syndrome, cardiac issues, you know, the list goes on. obesity, diabetes.
Yeah.
And if you, I just posted today a new paper that just came out. If you go to my Instagram, Rick Collins ESQ, and just look there, I put a link to a new study that finds that low testosterone is linked to anxiety.
I saw it.
Yep. And they now have identified the biochemical mechanism by which, through a rat study, by which they now suspect that that makes that link. So sure, low testosterone is a huge problem. Obviously, too much of anything, taking massive amounts of anabolic steroids is going to make you sick. You know, you're not going to do well with it either in any respect. And I always say the devil is in the dose, right? You know, the difference between a medicine and a poison is dosage.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, if you drink a glass of red wine, if you like a nice Cabernet, you know, some say any amount of wine, any amount of alcohol is not good for you, maybe. But there's also some evidence that maybe there's some cardiac benefits, the resveratrol, the alcohol thinning the blood, whatever your theory, you know. If certainly there's a difference between a glass of wine with dinner at night and two bottles of scotch every night, you know, so you're going to get very sick and die. And if we used the two bottles of scotch as the way we think about the consumption of alcohol, period, which is what we do with steroids, right?
Right.
So the public does, you know, the general public and the medical community thinks that everybody who's using steroids, including people who are legally prescribed TRT, are the equivalent of the two bottles of scotch, right? Okay. So, it's a matter of context. And too often in this society, we lose that.
Absolutely. I thoroughly agree. So let's kind of shift gears here, because we were also talking about this earlier, and we were kind of talking about FDA, suppression of information, censorship, things like that. I ran that poll on Instagram about, you know, the trust in the FDA giving us the proper health information. And I didn't vote on it. I just wanted to see what people said. And it was an astounding 100% no. And, you know, it wasn't thousands and thousands of people answering. And I got a feeling some people are scared to even answer that in fear of whatever, you know, and I get it.
Sure.
But I did not get one vote of yes, not one. I'm interested to know. I have an opinion. What is your thinking on that? And what has killed or at least lowered the trust that much as time has gone on? Because I don't think it was always like that.
No. You know, I think part of it is it's become politicized to a degree.
Yeah.
And so there are people who become just huge believers that they may not be your followers or mine, but who are just total believers in whatever the FDA says or the CDC says has to be true.
Right.
And I think there's a growing population of folks who believe that anything the FDA or CDC says is not true.
Yep.
And so, and there's this presumption, this assumption coming out that maybe the FDA is not so much interested in individual health or public health, but more interested in the pharmaceutical industry and its profits. And there have been a number of stories that have come into the media that kind of are questionable about the way that employees shift from the big pharmaceutical companies to the FDA and then back. And it's sort of the same players in both worlds. And if you look at some of the movies about the way the opiate crisis happened and the role that the FDA played in approving OxyContin, you know, is certainly troubling if you watch those documentaries or those fictionalized accounts, you know, telling the story. So, I think that there's certainly a question of whether we're getting the right information. One of the things that you can find in my bio is a link to an article that I wrote. I actually just put it on LinkedIn. So it's on my LinkedIn, but you can link to it out of the bio on my Instagram page. And it's an article about the role of the government in the censorship of health information on social media platforms. And there was a case where the state of Missouri sued the administration and the agencies for pressuring social media companies to take away, to remove or shadow ban content that was not in line with what the government narratives were. And obviously the First Amendment prevents the government from infringing free speech, right? I mean, that's, you know, of all the amendments, that's the first one, right? It's important. So the right of free speech in a free society to be able to say what you want without fear that the government is going to suppress that speech is important.
Sure.
But what the case said, and it actually went up to the circuit court, which is the highest court before, you know, the circuit courts are the highest courts before the Supreme Court of the United States. And the links to both the lower court decision and the circuit court decision are in my article. So read them. People should read. These are public records that, you know, judges have made decisions and they've issued written decisions looking at the facts and making assessments of them. I invite everybody to read those decisions that are linked on the page because it's troubling. It's very, very troubling if the government pressures Twitter or other social media platforms to do what it can't do itself, but does through a platform, through a media platform. So that's disturbing stuff. And, you know, the question of what do you deal with, you know, how do you deal with misinformation? And there is a lot of misinformation. I mean, we read it on social media. And some people can get so wrapped up in that misinformation that they become galvanized into action to do maybe bad things because of that misinformation. It's a concern. On the other hand, you know, censoring what you think is misinformation that might even turn out later to be correct is problematic. And so, and some of that appears to have happened, which is not a good thing.
No.
On the one hand, you don't want somebody to be able to set up a website and get thousands of people to follow him on a diet of eating only sawdust.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
I mean, it's not a good thing. On the other hand, I think that the best way to combat misinformation is to put out reliable, truthful, accurate information and make that accessible to the public and try to steer the public toward that reliable information.
Well, and one of the things that bothers me, and I'm curious to your thinking on this, because like when I was growing up, you were taught to ask as many questions as you could, because that's how you gain knowledge. And it's not, and you know what? I get it. I used to kind of be like this, especially when I first kind of started becoming a personality online, where if somebody questioned me, I'd get irritated. And then I think back, why did I get irritated? Well, because I'm being questioned and I think I'm always right. Well, now it's like, don't question me because, you know, I'm right and this is the narrative and that's it. And I believe that not allowing people to ask questions, not allowing people to formulate opinions, not allowing people to dig deep. And it's always in the details, right? So like you were talking, go read. Right. I've read multiple times different bills that have been passed or attempted to be passed in Congress. And one side will say, oh, see, these people don't want to pass this. Well, if you go read it, it's because they put 8,000 different things in there. And then there's like 5% that is actually geared towards the bill of what it's supposed to be.
Right.
But they make it, they fill it with verbiage and they make it so long that no one's going to go take the time to read it. Well, I've sat down and done it just to see for myself. You know, and people do, sometimes people are way overboard on their conspiracy side, but some people are also way too believing and think that none of this stuff goes on. Right. And that's what my point in this is. Always ask questions, always read, and always do your own personal homework. Now, you and I and the next person, we may read something and we may come to a different conclusion, right?
Right.
And so maybe a little bit of help in terms of translation on what something means. Okay, that's cool. That's fine. We can figure that out together. But just not asking questions and being forced to fall in line is a problem. It's a major problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And not being exposed to the contrary views
of
people who think differently than you is a huge problem. You know, one of the problems on college campuses now is that there's, you know, an idea that if somebody is going to be a speaker, a guest lecturer who has views that are contrary to the prevailing cultural, you know, understanding within that college, that the way to address it is to ban that speaker, to prevent that speaker from having a pulpit to be able to say what they think. You know, I think that's very deleterious, because then you live in your own bubble. You never get exposed to any views other than people repeating back to you what you already believe.
Right.
And so you become more and more entrenched in that belief, deeper and deeper into your own bubble, and less open to the possibility that maybe, just maybe, you're wrong.
Right.
And there's another way of seeing this. And I think one of the things that we've lost as a society is the openness to be able to say, I believe this, but let me hear what you have to say. And I'll keep an open mind about it. I may not agree with you ultimately, but I'll respect that you'll present these views to me. And maybe I'm not 100% sure that I'm right about everything. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you've got something that's worth a second look and reconsideration. And I think if we find that place, we have a better chance of fixing some of the problems that we have in society now, which is where we've become completely tribalized. You know,
yes.
I've got my tribe and you've got your tribe, and this is what we believe. And ultimately it's you're bad because you don't believe the things that I believe. And it works in all directions and in every little tribal group. And we have to really, we have to work on that to find a way of talking with each other.
I agree.
We're all in it together, you know?
I agree. You know, one of the things that I found just throughout life, the biggest culprits are the ones that scream the loudest. So like and I'm just going to use this as an example, and I'm sorry if somebody doesn't like it, but the ones that always say, this is a threat to democracy, when in reality, they're the ones that are taking away your democracy and their actions and what they're doing. And people tend to flip the narrative. It's kind of like the overprotective boyfriend that thinks that the girl's always cheating on him, when in reality, he's the one doing it. And he's worried because,
right,
you know, because he knows what she could be doing at the same time.
Right.
So, and the people that always have to talk about how good of a person they are, like they have to convince themselves because they know they're doing something wrong.
Sure. Yeah.
And you probably, as an attorney, you see a million liars, and I'm sure you've got the ability to read people quite well. So I'm sure that you understand exactly where I'm coming from. But I swear to you, the biggest culprits scream the loudest, and they intend to say something that they're actually doing. And that bothers the shit out of me. It really does. Yeah. Because I see
the
right
name for that is hypocrisy, right?
Yes.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, one of the things, and I think this came with age and maturity and deeper prayer life for me, was my ability to start listening to other people that I disagreed with. So, for instance, just as an example, I'd have people I highly respect that would talk about running a DECA-only cycle. And I'm using this in the cycle world. And I just was always had this in my head. Oh, it's bad. It's bad. No, 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 no. And I say, you know, and I tell people now, look, I don't follow this protocol and I don't care for it. It doesn't work for me, but I've seen people I respect that do it and can do it, and everybody's different.
Right.
And life is trial and error. Some things are going to work for you that may not work for me.
Right.
You might be able to eat a lot of carbs and I can't. You know, I mean, it's just anything in life is trial and error. And I think the problem is that we are almost being directed to live in a straight line mentality, and there's no way off this path, and it's this way or no way. And that is not reality, and it's not life.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. And you're put on that one track, and it starts when you're very young. You know, I grew up in a very different world. I grew up in a world where, you know, you went out at in the summer at breakfast time. You went home for lunch, then you were gone. You were on the streets until dinner time, right?
Exactly.
And that's how you grew up. And, you know, you made your mistakes. You got your bumps and bruises. But there were no organized play dates. Everything wasn't structured.
No.
Everything wasn't rendered safe. You know, nobody was wearing helmets when they rode bicycles. And in some ways, certainly we've made dangerous activities safer, sure.
Yeah.
But at some point it's like, you know, there's a bell curve where you hit maximum balance between safety and freedom. And when you go too far into safetyism, which I think we have done, where we're so concerned that we've actually made safety from a physical word into an emotional word, where if, you know, it used to be, if I said, I don't feel safe, Dylan, when I was a kid, it was because, you know, I was in the middle of traffic,
right,
to get the softball, you know, or the hardball that we're playing. But now it's become, I don't feel safe if you say something that is not in line with my pre-existing beliefs that have been reinforced by my own community, my bubble community of folks. And that's not a good thing.
No.
You know, nothing grows in a safe space.
No.
Nothing grows there. It's, you know, we only grow through exposure to stress and adversity. I mean, that's the reality. And I always use the analogy to bodybuilding, right? I mean, you know, you go in the gym, you do a set. If you never try for that extra rep, if you never go outside your comfort zone, you're never going to grow. You're never going to make the physical changes in order to stress it and then recover from it and get stronger from it. You know, it's only by going into that pain zone. It's only by, you know, making yourself uncomfortable that you can grow. And this, I think as a society, we're now moving where no one can ever be uncomfortable. Everybody has to be comfortable all the time. That is stagnancy. That is death. There is nothing that is going to come from that is worth a shit.
No. I mean, it's like a socialist mentality almost to me, and I can't stand it. And just like when I was talking to you about the cardio I do, I didn't just wake up one day and start running 10 miles
a day. You do more cardio, brother, than anybody I know, man. But look, you know, I've been doing more, and I do a lot, but not two hours a day like you, man. It's...
Well, and I'm telling you, I've gone through some hell to get to that point, though. Sure. I've been in some serious uncomfort, whether it's battling injuries, whether it's, oh, you know, I don't want to kick this up a notch, or I don't want to try to go past, you know, and you get stuck. And I've been stuck on 4 miles and 5 miles. But if I didn't try something new and get completely into discomfort, I would have never gotten to where I'm at. And
that's the point.
You know, just like videos I do, for example, that wasn't comfortable for me at first at all. But I knew I was told I had an ability to do it, and I kept trying to do it. I go back and watch some of the stuff I did now, and I'm just sitting here going, oh, my gosh, you know. And I'm sure in 5 years I'll look at my stuff now and do the same thing. But you got to, you said, and like with training, with different diets, a guy like me especially that's so structured, and I've been trying new stuff lately that I haven't done in a decade, it's uncomfortable. And you learn, hey, this made me gain weight unwanted. This made me gain good weight. But if you don't do these things and what you just said.
And it's got to be incremental, right?
Yes.
That's why we call it in bodybuilding, we call it progressive resistance, right?
Yes.
So if you're new in the gym and you're squatting 135 and you say, okay, I want to really pass my pain barrier. So I'm putting, you know, 495 on the bar and now I'm going to do a squat, you know, it's going to be disastrous.
Right. Of course. Know?
So, yeah. So we have to be reasonable when we say it, but it's that little bit, just pushing yourself little by little past that comfort zone into the uncomfortable zone.
Yes.
Not so much that it's going to kill you, enough that it's going to force you to adapt. And I think that's really what it is. There's nothing to adapt to if you don't have some kind of a catalyst for that adaptation. You need to you know, stress the muscle in order to cause protein synthesis for it to rebuild itself and come back stronger than it was before. And the same can be true in virtually everything in life. And it's important, I think, especially for young people, to get that message that it's okay to be uncomfortable. That's actually a good thing, because that's where you're going to grow.
Absolutely. I always say this: the best teachers have often made the most mistakes, right? And if you don't fail, you don't really know what progress is.
Right.
I mean, you don't know what you've overcome and what you've achieved. Overcoming stuff,
right,
and obstacles is what shapes your future and what shapes you as 100%. A person. Yeah. I'm a good teacher because I've made such a fuckload of mistakes. I feel like I'm good at teaching people what not to do and how to go about things. And I feel like that's helped me become a better teacher. I'm not proud of the mistakes I made, don't get me wrong, but you know, I've learned so much and it's helped me to progress as a person. I think everybody needs that. I'm not saying go out and fuck up all the time. That's not what I'm saying. don't make it a habit,
right?
But don't be scared to try something or be in a bad spot, because overcoming it is going to teach you. You know what, Rick, what I do a lot of times is if I look at something that's new, or I'm not a handyman, right? And I've had projects here recently and I go, you know what, if this fucking guy can do it, I'm sure I can, you know? And you got to look at it. If somebody did it, someone else can do it. Right.
Right.
And I think the problem is sometimes people look at stuff and they're instantly defeated. They're instantly excuse, you know, something, anything. And it's like, look, sit down, think about it, tell yourself you can do it, and figure the shit out. It might take you a little longer than somebody that knows what they're doing.
Sure.
And I'm not saying everybody could go be a dentist or, you know, be a mechanic, but there's a lot of stuff you could figure out if you just let yourself and stop living in a shell or being scared of everything. And the worst thing that you said was the people that say, I feel like I'm in danger because of something that got said. It's like, dude, you don't know danger. You tell me you feel like danger walking outside at 3 a.m. alone in a dark alley. Okay, that's dangerous.
Right. Right.
Somebody's saying something you don't
being in a foxhole somewhere in Europe during World War II.
Yeah.
I mean, it's okay to be uncomfortable and, you don't need a trigger warning for anything that somebody's going to say that might possibly be inconsistent with your worldviews.
Exactly. I could, and
it's okay not to get a trophy.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yes.
That's a statement that I think some people's heads would explode. But it's okay. Not everybody needs to get a trophy.
No.
The ones who get the trophies should be the ones who excelled. And by not getting a trophy, you go back and you say, okay, well, either I'm going to work harder to get better at this so that I will get a trophy next time. Or you say, you know what? Maybe track and field isn't for me. Maybe I'll go to the gym and maybe I'll work out and maybe that's where I'll find myself and my abilities will be better matched to that. Nobody's great at everything. If you get a trophy at everything you do, you are going to be so misled in what life has in store when you get out of school.
I know.
Because that ain't the real world, brother.
No.
You know?
Everybody don't get a raise.
Right. No, I've never been told no. I've gotten a trophy every time. Well, and then at some point, you know, you're in the real world and you don't get the promotion.
Yeah.
Or they say they don't need you, or somebody else gets the raise and you don't. And suddenly you're crushed because You've never experienced, you know, reality before.
I agree. You don't deserve a reward just for doing something.
Showing up.
No, that's not how it works. You can get a perfect attendance award at school. Great. Yeah. Okay, fine. But, you know, and like when I we have our track and field days in elementary or something, for example, and this might be extreme, but if I got a second or third place, because they only did first, second, and third, right. And I was ashamed with the second or third ribbon. I only wanted that first place ribbon. And it's almost like, hey, right. I know the whole, if you're not first, you're last is funny from Ricky Bobby, but I live in that right. world. If you are not first, you are last because you didn't win, and it gives you motivation to go and right. work harder. Otherwise, what motivation do you have if everything's, oh, here, great job, honey.
Right.
I mean,
right.
you don't have any
whether
sort
you put
of drive.
In 20% or you put in 80% or 100%, it doesn't matter. You're getting the same reward.
Yes.
That's a problematic situation.
And even in schools now, a lot of times they don't even give A, B, C, D, F. It's like they're a pass or a no pass. You don't even know what yeah. you're doing. You don't know what you really did.
Right.
It's coddling, and all of this does not build character. It does not build any sort of guidance to what the real world is like, because the real world is not that way.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure that there are a lot of people who are watching who will say, yeah, you know, but we're probably preaching to the choir with those people. Those are people who were in their bubble,
right.
you know? And so, and I always try to open my mind to the other views that people may have about things. And hopefully, those who may watch this, who didn't come into this thinking these things, maybe had a very different view of some of the stuff that we've covered, might say, you know what, maybe there's something there that's worth discussing. You know, maybe there's a, you know, there's a middle ground somewhere that I can move or can shift a little bit closer to this idea of discomfort, for example, being a catalyst for a necessary element for moving forward in life and being successful.
I agree 100%. I love talking about this stuff. I get fired up a little bit, and I'm sorry, but I can't
me
help
too.
It.
Yeah.
I
love it.
I'm not old, but I mean, I'm going to be 42, and I was just raised more old school, and
you're an old soul, my
yes,
friend. You're an
yeah.
old soul.
And I don't have that, oh, everything's got to be this way mentality, because a lot of the stuff I do correlates to now. You got to correlate. But man, I swear to you, brother, I there's things that just, you can see it drives me crazy.
Yeah. Yep.
I think yep. the more that you go through in life, and the more that you realize, and the more you overcome, it almost makes you sad to what it's become now. And yeah. And not everybody's wired like that, but I do feel bad at times, and I try to teach it in like the way we're teaching it, to where people can see and understand maybe what they're missing, or maybe, I mean, and some people won't, but
right.
even if a few people get it, I feel like we've done something.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, I completely agree. And hopefully the viewers enjoyed our little, you know, session as much as we did.
I know.
So which of those sneakers back there are you going to wear for your cardio tonight?
Those do not get worn for anything.
No, I figured that.
that
I figured that.
That wall there, they a lot of those won't get worn, but they when I do wear them, I carry them out in a case, and they only get worn in a certain spot and taken off. And so
I love the Gumby. I love the Gumby hat.
I was explaining to my wife now about it and what it was. This is one of my favorite old school cartoons. I know it's super cheesy, but man, it was a good one when I was a kid.
Gumby and Pokey. Well, there was a time where on Saturday Night Live, they were doing those characters as, you know, spoofs and skits, if you remember. I think it was Eddie Murphy who was Pokey.
Yep, it was. Right? I go back on YouTube. I love the old school cartoons, and I have one time I'll show you a video. I have a big retro room in here, and it's like all this old school memorabilia. It'll blow your mind. I'll show it to you sometime.
Awesome.
Yeah, I know that we went a little over time, and I appreciate the time.
No
super
problem,
fun. Bro. We could talk all day, I'm sure.
We sure could. So, well, hopefully I'll see you soon in person at some point at one of the
yeah.
trade shows or conferences or expos or contests. And, you know, we'll do this again. This was fun.
Absolutely, brother. Absolutely. So guys, make sure that you follow Rick. I will leave all of his information in the description. Why don't you tell him where to follow you though, Rick, too?
Sure. Yeah. You could, I think go to the Instagram, Rick Collins ESQ. And if you go in the bio, you'll see that my writing about the case that I talked about, as well as other podcasts and other writings. That there's lots of stuff. If any of this stuff, whether it was the legal stuff, which is a lot of what I do in my day job, or these more philosophical musings that we've had about sociocultural issues, there's a lot on my bio that you'll find there. If you I try to help everybody I can with any kind of legal problems of all kinds. So if you go to rickcollins.com, that's the site that covers a lot of what I do in federal cases. If you're interested in the steroid stuff, you can go to steroidlaw.com. And like Dylan said, it's available on Amazon. It's Alpha Male Challenge, kind of an interesting, cool book about masculinity and the crisis of it. And I look forward to seeing you guys on social media.
Absolutely. Well, once again, Rick, I appreciate the time, man. And obviously we'll talk a lot. So, guys, make sure to follow Rick and Rick posts a lot of cool stuff on Instagram. He's got good stories, good pictures, just good things to check out. So follow him. You can follow me at Dylan Jamelli on Instagram and other social as well. So once again, appreciate everybody watching and stay tuned for plenty more to come. Dylan Jamelli and Rick Collins signing off.